Hey, Adam Gaudette got married this week. Sounds like it went really well. Eh, Andy?
Yeah, he was trying to entertain his wife, I guess, by doing a little... He took a shirt off.
It was a lap dance. Mm-hmm.
He was trying to whip his leg over her head, and he kind of missed and smacked her right in the face with his foot.
Yep.
He kicked her in the head.
The old song says, ain't love a kick in the head. And that's what we learned here from Adam Gaudette. Now, fortunately for her, I don't really understand why he wasn't wearing shoes and socks. He was actually barefoot. So he got her right in the forehead, temple area. And it's a good shot. It's a real good shot. But I think the saving grace there is that he was not wearing shoes. Like, if he had like a chunky dress shoe on, that would have been permanent damage.
Oh, yeah.
And that wedding would not have been remembered well. Now, I do wonder if it will be remembered well anyway, because we all know about people gathering for weddings right now. Not exactly advisable, but that's neither here nor there. What we're talking about is a woman getting kicked in the head, and that's what's important.
Yes. We can report, though, that she's fine, and they put it on their TikTok, so I'm assuming that the marital relations are fine, like they're not getting divorced or anything. So,
I mean, I would hope so. We're like a week into this thing, so...
Yeah.
If one little kick to the face is all that it takes. And actually, I'll tell you guys a personal story. Oh, just
boy.
Before I proposed to my wife, like maybe an hour before, we were sitting on a bench. We were in San Francisco and we were waiting for a ferry to pick us up from Tiburon to take us back to San Francisco. And this bird was flying directly at our faces. And I freaked out and put my hands up to protect myself and punched her right in the head. And she was like, ow, you punched me in the head. And I was like, I don't know, I got scared. I was protecting myself from the bird. And then it felt like this omen, right? Because I was like, I'm supposed to protect her from the bird. And I put my own arms up to protect myself, punched her in the face, and then had to propose like an hour later. So
and she still said yes. So I guess it wasn't that bad of a punch.
She still said, well, technically she said, really? Question mark was the first thing she said.
What everybody wants to hear.
She eventually said yes. So despite me punching her in the head, and I'm sure she'll be thrilled that I shared this story.
Yeah. I lost my wedding rings on my honeymoon snorkeling, and
ooh,
that's why I'm not married right now.
Oh man.
Sound of Hockey episode 113. We're calling this one the Martin Brodeur episode. Why are we calling it that, John? Is it because Enterprise asked him 113 questions before just determining that the cup that was left in his car was actually his coffee cup?
Is it the Calder cup?
It's because that's how many times I saw that commercial during the playoffs.
Per game.
Hey, that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Yeah. He also had 113 career wins in the playoffs. And he's good for number two overall. Any guesses to who number three is in the all-time playoff career wins?
Patrick Waugh.
Patrick Waugh is number
That's
one.
That's a good guess.
Nice.
I will say Grant Fuhr.
That's accurate.
Hey!
Very good job, friend of the pod, Grant Fuhr.
This is Sound of Hockey. I am Darren Brown, at Darren Fun Brown on the Twitter, joined as always by Andy Ide. Hello, Andy.
How's it going? I'm at Andy Ide on the Twitter.
And John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL2 Seattle on the Twitter.
And we are coming to you from Seattle/Minnesota. John and Andy in Seattle, I in Minnesota. We have a great episode this week. We have none other than Seattle T-Birds Connor Roulette, a youngster with a very bright future ahead of him. A fun conversation with him, so stick around for that. We didn't have an iTunes review, but we do have a Twitter review, which this isn't really like a real thing, but I appreciate the effort here. This comes from @DontGoGlove, who's been a longtime listener, first-time caller, and he has communicated with us quite a few times.
We're taking
on
calls?
The Twitter. Yeah, @DontGoGlove is his Twitter handle. His name is Steve, and he is a goalie. I know he's a goalie because his avatar is a goalie, and he loves Goalie Gear Corner. Anyway, he says, the first six-star review of the @Sound_Hockey podcast. I tried my darndest to do a legitimate review, but I don't have iTunes, and none of the other podcast apps seem to be allowing reviews right now, so I hope this counts. Yeah, we'll accept it.
Yeah.
This podcast is the place to be if you love hockey. Not only are Darren, John, and Andy extremely knowledgeable about everything hockey related, but their on-air chemistry is hilarious. I look forward to the part every week where Darren slow plays the intro of the show's best segment, Goalie Gear Corner, and the guys react with groans. I still haven't figured out if the groans are real or for comedic effect.
Oh, they're real.
Don't
go changing because it's hilarious. In addition to their great chemistry, the guys get awesome guests every week. Well, most weeks, I'd say we get pretty great guests. Mm-hmm. And they cover the entire spectrum of possible topics. Interested in future player news? How about analytics? Oh, your thing is broadcasters? Well, they've got you covered and then some. In addition to the podcast, they've also got a great new website at soundofhockey.com, and the guys are really fun to interact with on Twitter. If Darren has read this far into the review, I'm going to mention that it's a bucket list item of mine to be referred to as a friend of the pod, and hope this sentence makes it on air. Keep up the terrific work, guys. Your show is the best. You know what, Steve? You are a friend of the pod, and the fact that we haven't called you one before is unacceptable on our part. So we're sorry for the delay in getting that to you, but we do appreciate the kind words, even if it's not on iTunes.
No doubt.
Was that really just one sentence?
One sentence.
He says, I hope this sentence makes it on the show.
That last one.
Like many sentences.
That last one.
Oh.
Yeah, mostly, mostly the friend of the pod part, not the whole thing.
And is it 6 stars out of 5 or 6 stars out of like 10? Because then it's not so great.
That's a really good question. Yeah, or like out of 20, right? Like, yeah. I'd be disappointed, but it looks good as far as I could tell, so I'm happy with it.
Thank you for that, Don't Go Glove, Steve.
Let's start with some Seattle news. The Kraken have named a couple more amateur scouts. Are we interested in this?
Sure, it's news. I mean, we need some amateur scouts. Chris McDonald and Eddie Olchek Jr. were named named amateur scouts. Have you heard of an Olchek before?
Edzo.
I have.
Edzo Jr. Ricky. He was an assistant coach at Bemidji State, Darren. Did you know that?
The Beavers.
And McDonald was a previous European amateur scout with Arizona Coyotes and Vancouver Canucks. Have you heard of them before, Andy?
One of them, yeah.
Yeah, so I think Olchek Jr. is kind of going to be primarily scouting the USHL by video, I assume. And so I'm not sure the full scope of McDonald, but it could be a European kind of affiliate type deal. So there you go.
Good stuff. And speaking of people being hired, Kendall Coyne Schofield has been hired by a team. Who hired her and what is she going to do?
She was hired by the Chicago Blackhawks as player development coach, which is pretty cool.
That is awesome.
So she has kind of a dual role with the Blackhawks. She will also serve as a youth hockey growth specialist and continuing to lead her all-girls youth program, the Golden Coins. How about that?
Oh, that's nice. The Golden Coins.
Yeah,
I love that.
That is awesome.
Well, I don't know if you know, in Arizona, Lindsay Fry has like the Small Fry program. And one thing that's subtly not, you know, that's obviously a big deal with Kendall Coyne Schofield, but they also promoted Megan Hunter, who was Stan Bowman's executive assistant. She's now director of hockey administration and amateur scout. And so that's pretty cool, too, that kind of flew under the radar because obviously everybody knows Kendall Coyne Schofield pretty well. So I just want to kind of call that out as well.
One kind of local tie to it, as long as we love to do those things anyway, Haley Salvian, who covers the Senators and women's hockey for The Athletic, she spoke to Kendall Coyne Schofield. She says on Twitter, Kendall Coyne Schofield says, Cammy Granato fueled her desire to be an Olympian as a child and now fueled her desire to get into the X's and O's hockey side of things. And then she says, quote, no matter how old we get, she still inspires me. So that's pretty cool. That's a Seattle Kraken employee, of course, Cammy Granato. So I thought that was a quote worth sharing. Speaking of people being hired again, which we were already speaking about, Jake DeBrusk has been rehired by the Boston Bruins to the tune of 2 years, $3.675 million per. That seems like a reasonable number for Jake DeBrusk, right?
Yeah. He's an RFA, so 2 years, that's a good amount. He's a little inconsistent, so that's kind of the knock against him. He is forecasted to be protected by the Boston Bruins when the expansion draft comes around.
But that means, of course, right, John? That means, of course, somebody else will get exposed.
Yeah, but I mean, he was always targeted.
And speaking of people that aren't going anywhere, Matt Dumba is apparently not going anywhere, which, whatever, he was...
Is that a comment on the Wild's playoff chances?
Oh, okay. I mean, he's probably their best, one of their best players, and he's a good trade chip. So the thought all along has been that they're going to swap Dumba for a top center because they desperately need a center. Guerin did a quote to NHL.com this week saying that, you know, basically they're comfortable at least starting the season with him. But we kind of knew this. I'm not really sure why this is even news, but people were tweeting about it, so we thought we should talk about it. And I don't pass up an opportunity to talk about the Wild.
Well, in the subcontext here is if Matt Dumba makes it through the entire season and he's still with the Wild are in quite the predicament to protect, probably going to protect only three defensemen. So that would expose Dumba to Seattle.
I highly doubt they'd do that, though. I I bet they would go the eight skaters route because they have Brodin, Suter, and Spurgeon are all on. I think they all have no move clauses. So
Zuccarello.
Then they'll just. He's also got a no move, but he's a forward.
Yeah.
So I mean, who are they gonna? I'm pretty confident that if they get to that point, they'd protect all four defensemen. I don't think they would just lose Dumba because I think he's. They see him as one of their most valuable players.
Well, that might be the case.
Perhaps you can read about it at some time in the coming future on soundofhockey.com, where there, we have been breaking
can
down.
Can I ask
every
you a
team.
Minutia question, though, in this thing, just as you were talking?
You may.
So I get that they want a center, and Dumba obviously is an attractive chip, but isn't he also, you know, a really good young defenseman who has some offensive upside? So if you give him up and get a center, then don't you need to get another defenseman like that?
Not really, because Spurgeon plays that kind of mm-hmm. game to some degree. Brodin is not a super offensive guy, but he's a good defenseman, and they have a couple other guys. Like Brad Hunt is an offensive defenseman. He doesn't get that much playing time, but he's mm-hmm. pretty good.
So it's not a Robbie Peter to pay Paul kind of situation.
Not really, no. Their okay. depth is on the blue line. Like where they struggle most is at center. So, you know, giving up a Matt Dumba right now to get a center would make them a much better team. But they haven't done that this offseason, and the stories coming out of Minnesota were that Guerin was going to just sit back until he got the perfect offer, and so far, obviously, that hasn't happened, so we'll see what happens. I mean, I don't think he's in any rush to trade Dumba, but I absolutely think that he's probably going to trade him before we get to the expansion draft. That's just my opinion. I don't know anything about it, but...
You're not an insider?
No, I'm not. That's just what I'm hearing around the campfire.
Okay.
That's been a lot of minutia. How'd you guys rope me into this? This wasn't even my idea.
I was legitimately curious, because it's not often that a guy that I consider to be a, you know, really good defenseman like that is available. So that's all I was curious yeah. about.
Well, he's quote unquote not available, but he really is available.
Sure,
let's be honest.
Yeah.
Hey, let's move on to our interview with the Seattle Thunderbirds, Connor Roulette.
Oh, there's blackjack and poker and the roulette wheel. A fortune won and lost on every deal. All you need is a strong heart and a nerve of steel. Viva Las Vegas. Viva.
We now welcome onto Sound of Hockey a left wing for the Seattle Thunderbirds. As a 16-year-old, he scored 19 goals and 20 assists, and he recently appeared on NHL Central Scouting's preliminary players to watch list for the 21 draft as an A prospect, which makes him a potential first-round pick. Welcome to the show, Connor Roulette, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We are excited to be talking to you. I know Andy knows you pretty well from your time playing for the Thunderbirds, and he's done some radio with Tom Boyning, and I know that Tom likes to say, spin that wheel after you score goals. I'm curious if that's the catchphrase that you would choose if you were selecting your own goal scoring catchphrase, or if you had something else in mind.
Yeah, I know, it's pretty cool. It's something I probably wouldn't have thought of. But yeah, like, I don't know, it's pretty original, I think, for, you know, and just kind of just make that up. But definitely it's funny to hear, and that's probably something I'd choose too.
Do you think yours is better? That's better than Kooby Dooby Doo that he does for Kubacek?
Oh, I'm not sure. I think Kubi and Andre had the best ones. I think Kuchu and
that's Kubi right. Yeah,
were probably did better. But no, yeah, I'm proud of mine. I think it's pretty cool to have one of those nicknames or one of those catchphrases.
Yeah, my last name is Brown, so I don't know. Like, pull
that
out.
That probably won't end well.
Brown yeah. marker, Darren. I don't know. Anyway, you also, I know, picked your own goal song, though, and you chose Viva Las Vegas. And so that seems like it's a little bit on brand with that catchphrase. But I'm just wondering how you landed on that selection for your goal song.
Well, yeah, it's a funny story, actually. So at the beginning of the season, when we were choosing goal songs, like, I had no idea what to choose. And I remember I originally at the beginning of the season, like, you'll probably... You kind of watch clips and all that, and you kind of see that I actually, like, originally chose Kickstart My Heart by Motley Crue, because at the time, like, I kind of thought it was kind of one of my go-to songs before a game and kind of just to get me going. So I wasn't really sure on what song to choose, so I did Kickstart My Heart, and I was just kind of expecting, like, not sure how the season was going to kind of turn out. But then I guess once I kind of started getting more, like, comfortable and all that and kind of having more fun with it, I was talking to Jared Crooks and George Lopez about kind of switching my songs, because they thought it'd be a good idea to kind of use something that fit well with my last name. So yeah, talking with them, we kind of went through a couple different song ideas, and that we came across the Viva Las Vegas by Elvis, and you know, I thought it still fit pretty well by saying the last name in it. So it's definitely an easy choice, and yeah, definitely switched. I think it switched like midway through the year, or kind of closer to the end, but is definitely one of a is a good song to choose. I think it fit really well.
Yeah, I love it. I think that's so clever, and it's pretty cool. I feel like, yeah, most guys would take that route of like a song that they think is cool, right? And you went with something that's like more on your brand, more on your character. So I love it. But yeah. I do want to talk about, you know, your early playing days here for the Thunderbirds. So I know as a 15-year-old, you did end up playing one game with the team. I'm curious about how that came about. How'd you get called up, and how'd that all shake out? What do you remember from that game?
Yeah, well, I remember I was playing at the Thrashers that season, and I think it was New Year's Eve. I had a bunch of like kind of my teammates at my house, and we were kind of having a little small team New Year's party. And I remember Bill calling me. He called me. He's like, "Hey, how's it going? Just checking in." He was kind of checking in on me. He's like, "Oh, it's going good." He's asking me how the season's going and all that. And I kind of already had a plan to go out to Brandon to watch that game. And so we were kind of had it on our schedule to go out, watch Brandon game. And I'm pretty sure we were going to go out to Regina too to watch that game. So either way, I was going to be out there watching. And Bill kind of called me asking me about it if I knew. And I was like, "Oh, yeah, like you're going to be out there playing." And I kind of remember like, looking at my teammates with a big smile on my face, and they're kind of like, who's that? Like, kind of listening and all that. I was like, "Oh, like, what's that?" Like, after you kind of hung up, after you told me I was playing, I was like, "Oh, like, boy, I'll play the game." And they kind of got all excited. And, yeah, like, when I kind of got there, they roomed me with Vulcan, you know, big, like, super vet, like, one of the best guys to ever play on that team, and just a really great role model. I was able to room with him for the night, and We kind of talk a lot about just the game and how nervous I was and all that. And I remember my family was in the same, I don't know if it was broken a rule or not, but they were in the same hotel with me. And I was kind of really nervous before the game. So like a couple hours before I went down to the rink, I wanted to kind of see them and kind of just got my kind of that nervous and that stress out. And getting ready and kind of being at that rink in that WHL kind of atmosphere is a lot different than what I was used to. And it was finally like, you know, I was always waiting for that kind of that first game to get out of the way. So to play in front of Brandon, like I had a bunch of family there and a lot of people kind of watching, supporting me. A bunch of my teammates came. And so it was pretty good to finally play that game. And yeah, it just it was pretty tough. Wasn't really used to it, but I think that it was a good game. And I was really proud of myself to finally get that game. And
you had a couple scoring chances in that game. That kind of helped your confidence going into the next season?
Yeah. I remember I won a couple night passes to Bracken Wood at scoring chance, or I had a shot, I think. Definitely kind of just being in that area and kind of having that, you know, being in the right spot at the right time type of mentality. I thought, yeah, it definitely helped my confidence a bit. And going back into the midget season, I was definitely felt like a different player. And I kind of felt like it wasn't slower, but like I was kind of more calmer with the puck, and it kind of like translated into that season. So yeah, it was definitely a big confidence booster, and I felt really good playing it. And definitely a lot of cheers from the other teams and a lot of congratulations, but it was a good time.
So you go into camp last year as a 16-year-old, and you're a rookie, and you played that one game, but you may still have a lot to learn about the league. And how different was that camp as opposed to whenever you get to go to camp this year, a year older and having a season under your belt?
Well, yeah, like going in there, like you're not sure. Like I didn't want to make too much high expectations about myself. I kind of went out there level-headed, and I wasn't sure if I was going to make it or not. I didn't really pack that much clothes because, you know, just being a 16-year-old, you're not really used to it. You know, I was scared, and I wasn't sure on how it was all going to turn out, but I kind of went to camp, and I think it was, like, first game in camp, I think I had, like, a hat trick or something like that, and I was kind of like, whoa, like, you know, it was a good start to camp. I kind of felt pretty good, and, going into preseason, I remember being a 15-year-old being in preseason, and you know, it was having a good time and that team mentality type of atmosphere. And I think we played in the Tri-City tournament, and I think I scored my first goal, like my first preseason goal in Everett. Mm-hmm. It was kind of finally good. Like I think I did an interview with you, Andy, and I said like it felt good to get the monkey off my back. And like right away my uncle texted me after that. He's like, "Get the monkey off your back, it's only your fourth game," or something like that. Like it's kind of it just kind of like goes to show like how much like my family knows like how much I love to score. And I made it past the preseason there. We're coming up to our home opener. I think we had like a week or so, and little meeting with the coach, like all the 16-year-olds and all the rookies, and kind of talking about how just kind of have all the players together. And turns out going into that week, I was going to be in the home opener. So yeah, it started off not having high expectations for myself, and kind of just going in there as a young kid, and I'm not really sure what to do. And finding out that you kind of make a team and you're playing that home opener is definitely an eye opener, and kind of built that confidence. And I didn't want to get too comfortable too soon, but I think the start of the season was pretty good. And then to the second part of that question, like coming in here as an older 17-year-old, kind of having that first season under my belt, like I know how it's going to feel for those 16-year-olds coming in, and kind of how the way I felt. So I think just kind of being that vet and kind of having that leadership role, or make those 16-year-olds not feel the way I did and kind of have more confidence in themselves, I think they'll kind of help them out a lot. And definitely looking forward to being there finally and having this pandemic slow down.
And 17-year-old is still young in life, but it was really impressive last year. You know, and you and I talked about this a little bit, about how you've become a role model at a young age for other First Nation or other Indigenous kids, not only just in your community, but even here in the Seattle area. Do you feel pressure with that? How have you handled that situation? I mean, that's pretty young to have that many people looking up at you.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say pressure, but I feel like there's a lot of like things you got to think about when it comes to that. It's kind of how you represent yourself on and off the ice, and kind of how there's a lot of people that are looking at you. But at the same time, I don't really like to think about it as much as pressure, other than kind of just making me able to feel more confident in myself and kind of have a reason on why I do what I do. And yeah, it's definitely something that, you know, there's kids who text me sometimes on Instagram, and it just kind of makes me feel good as a person and kind of makes me think that, you know, I'm doing something right, and I could be changing someone's life and all that. And, you know, like you said, like I am young, like 17-year-old, still not a vet yet, a super vet, but yeah, like just being kind of a younger kid and having kids that, you know, are a couple years or letting you know that you're doing a good thing is kind of definitely a confidence booster. And, you know, before a game, it's something I like to think about, just like, what can I do tonight that'll make, you know, other kids see like that what they want to do.
And then this summer you were featured on a TSN panel to talk about discrimination you faced as an Indigenous player growing up. You shared a lot of insight and what people and fans sometimes don't want to hear, but how important was it for you to share that information, you know, on kind of a national stage? Like you said, you're 17, and that's a big responsibility, and a lot of people probably would shy away from the limelight on kind of tough subjects like that. So, you know, how tough was that to share that with kind of all of Canada on TSN?
You know, personally, I don't think it wasn't that hard for me to kind of open up about it and all that. I think that, you know, coming from a guy like me, like not much people would kind of think that, oh, like I didn't even know this guy was an Indigenous kid, and open up about that and kind of let people know. It kind of felt good, actually, just to know that, you know, me who wouldn't like experience it as much as me, like, you know, saying like a kid who, you know, definitely this might be stereotypical for me to say, but like someone who looks more kind of Native than I do. So people might not expect me to be it. So just to kind of open up that, you know, people like me still kind of experience it, and to let people know that's still kind of happening this day, and just kind of how to, how I deal with it. And yeah, it definitely felt good. And just to kind of meet those people who are going through the same thing and kind of get the word out there. And I got a lot of feedback from it, a lot of support. So something that I would do again. And, you know, it's something I keep fighting for, and just letting people know that it's still there and how to deal with it, like how some people do. So
yeah, I thought you really handled yourself well in that panel, and I think some of the panelists also looked up to you, which was pretty cool. You know, being in the position you're at, I always wonder, do you have any ideas that we can create a more inclusive environment for people of color in this sport, whether it be fans or players?
I think it's just finding a way to kind of bring them together and kind of have that diversity that, you know, teams already do have. I think that being in the WHL, from my experience, that, you know, is really good. And the diversity there is good. Like players like, you know, me and Roddy, we never felt kind of discriminated or out of place. And, you know, Roddy was definitely one of those guys that everyone looked up to. So I think the WHL, like right now, is doing a good job and kind of having more knowledge on it. When I played AAA, we had a kind of we did a presentation, like one of our coach kind of had a meeting, players and teammates, and just kind of talked about like the consequences that the team would face, you know, if they were caught bullying or being racist. So I think like just having the more knowledge and kind of having parents on track with kind of consequences with all that, and, you know, the team did a really good job of kind of making us feel, you know, great and kind of willing to be there, and like high standards as well. Like, you know, him being a person of color, like there was never no kind of discrimination or racism towards him or kind of me and Roddy. So I think the WHL is doing a pretty good job so far, and a lot of the players are kind of realizing that they're kind of having more knowledge the more older they get. So I think they did a good job.
All right. Well, let's talk some hockey. you scored at will in Bantam and Midget. You had something like 101 points in 34 games at the U15 level. Why such a drop-off when you played for the Thunderbirds?
Yeah, what happened?
Definitely a way harder league.
On a serious note, like, what kind of adjustments did you have to make when you jumped to the WHL, and what was maybe the most challenging about making the jump?
Yeah, well, you go back to playing Bantam, and you're kind of playing against the guys you're used to playing against. Like, I've played against all those guys since I was 8 years old, and kind of figuring out, like, you know, to know who I'm playing against and know the defense, and it's kind of playing with the same guys that I've played with since I was 9. Like, we're 15 now. We've been playing with each other 4 or 6 years, and kind of having that team chemistry and being able to know the ice well. Like, I played in the Maples Community Center for probably 10 years. So it's just kind of having that home adaptability and kind of know that you're playing in front of your family, and it just kind of helps you along the way. And yeah, to put up, I forgot how much, 101 points in Bantam and 88, I think, in Midget. Being used to it and kind of being comfortable with where you're playing with it. And when you make the WHL, like, saying that goes around is don't get too comfortable, because, you know, you might get traded, you might not make it. So I think just having that mindset, like, I wasn't there to make the team. I wasn't here to score 100 points. I was just kind of here to, you know, play hockey and kind of earn my spot and just be a Thunderbird. So I think that's kind of the adjustment I had to make. Like I said, coming in here as a 16-year-old, I didn't make high expectations for myself. I was kind of just here to make a name for myself and be able to kind of crack that roster, which I did. It takes a long time to kind of get confident and find your game. And, you know, it's a lot faster. There's guys like, you know, Ty Smith and those guys you play against a lot, Jarvis, that are really skilled players, fast, and you kind of got to find a way to play with them and just continue to find your confidence. And after a while, it doesn't get easier, but once you kind of feel yourself and know how to play with against these certain teams, it's a little adjustment you got to make, but it's nothing like playing in the Midget or Bantam League. It's, you know, it's a really big adjustment for me.
So with a year under your belt, you're going to have about 100 points this year, no matter how many games they play. Is that?
That's a goal I make for myself, yeah.
Okay. Your confidence seemed to grow as the season went on. Did you feel more and more comfortable? You know, I still think of your celebration in Portland. That was a pretty confident one where you were kind of beaking the crowd.
Yeah, well, like, I think playing in that home opener, when you make that home first game roster, it kind of does help me a bit, and kind of that makes that road on how the season's going to go, kind of builds that path. And then when you score your first goal in your third game, I think coach had me with Wedman and Kikuchi that game. Like, being able to play with guys like that definitely boosts my confidence a lot. And I think when you're able to play with guys like that, it opens a lot more opportunity. And I scored my first goal that game, and then the two games after that, I think it was our fifth game of the season when I scored that hat trick. Again, I was playing with Gruden, Cade, and Mauner, like guys that played in the league and, you know, guys that are really smart players, and I didn't really have to do much other than kind of put the puck in the net. It kind of builds a lot more confidence and helps you kind of figure out where you have to be to score. And yeah, so those guys like that. And yeah, throughout the season, the confidence kind of grew and it felt pretty good.
So you grew up in Winnipeg, but which is a long way from Seattle, but you do have a Seattle connection with some former Thunderbirds, and Keegan Colasar and Ethan Bear. I know your brother played with those guys, and so you knew them. What kind of influence have they had on you, and do they still contact you about life in the WHL and hockey?
You know, as a kid, like, two of my biggest influences in hockey are probably my dad and brother. As a kid, I would always watch my brother play in these tournaments and kind of have, you know, always be a big fan of his teammates, whether he's playing in AAA or the MJHL or whatever. Those guys were, you know, they'd be my superheroes when it came to hockey. And my brother played on a team called the Team Pepsi. His team had all Pepsi colors and Pepsi logo and all that. It was a pretty cool team. That's when he played with Ethan Bear. I think he must have been like around my age, 15, 14. I'm not sure how old they were, but I was just a young kid. Ethan Bear was kind of those imports because it was like an all-Canadian team or all-Manitoba team, Winnipeg guys. And Ethan was one of those guys that came from another province and all that. So I thought, kind of paid more attention to him. And, you know, he's one of those good players. Then figuring out he went to the WHL, I was like, oh, like, you know, this guy's amazing. And then as a kid, like, I'd always kind of try to get a hold of him. And once I started getting older and I was drafted by Seattle, he kind of reached out. And our family, like, I'm pretty sure our moms are still good friends, and him and Shane are good friends. So, you know, he's just one of those guys that he didn't forget about me, and he's a good role model. And I would text him if I needed advice and kind of know how the team was. And Keegan, me and him kind of been at the gym a lot this summer, and me and him were both training at the rink. Another one of those kind of hockey stories, like him and my brother played on the Hawks, like the Bantam team that I grew up to play on. So just kind of being growing up in that same area of the city, and watching him as a kid, and then him like being able to kind of reach out to and see him at, you know, small Winnipeg skates or in the gym, you know, he'd come ask me questions and kind of, we'd kind of talk about the team. And, you know, he's just one of those guys that you'll have to kind of call your friend. So good influences, and kind of helped me figure out how to play with the Thunderbirds, and kind of made me a lot more excited to play with them.
Can you outlift him in the gym?
Not yet, but soon.
Okay. You mentioned a couple minutes ago the MJHL, which I thought segues nicely, because I know that you just snuck a couple of games in for the Selkirk Steelers of that league before they ended up shutting everything down. I'm curious how that kind of compared to the WHL, and just as a side question, are you tired of having all of your hockey endeavors interrupted by this pandemic yet?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me and the thing that I'm missing is kind of having that team, being on a team, I guess you can say, like being at the rink every day to see your friends and skate and practice with the guys you're most used to seeing, and not having that's kind of been a downside. And when it happens once and then you finally find a team to play with and it happens again, it's kind of hard and it is getting annoying. But yeah, the few, I think I played three games with Selkirk, and I remember the first game was kind of like, it was my first game since the end of the season, which would have been like 7 or 8 months. It definitely felt like it was my first game in 7 and 8 months. And, I don't think like I got much puck touches. I was kind of just, you know, skating around, and I had a good, nice scoring chance. I made a couple nice passes, but you can tell that my cardio, obviously, and being able to play in that game speed, and it was a lot different than playing in 4-on-4 and kind of small area stuff I did all summer. So it was a bit tough, but then the second two games, I definitely felt a lot better and felt like myself again. And I think it was our third game. Like we played Steinbeck back to back to back, you know, playing a team like Steinbeck as well, like really skilled team. I think like their top six were all 20s and 01s, 19-year-olds and 20s. So like a team that's that old and has that experience. Like I think they won the season last year. So they're a good team. And yeah, I kind of compared to like playing against Everett or Portland, really good guys. Like they're skilled and they're used to playing with each other, and they're kind of rough like Everett. Like once you touch the puck, they're kind of all on you. So yeah, it was definitely, it felt good to kind of get my first goal and first assist in my third game there. And I kind of had that confidence. I'm like, okay, maybe I'm starting to feel like myself again. And then boom, the season gets canceled. So it was pretty bad, but I think it's comparable to maybe playing against kind of like Everett. It was tough, and it's faster than I thought and expected. And it's rough and it's gritty. So it's something that a player like me wouldn't like playing in, but you know, it was a good experience, and I really kind of took a lot from it.
We thought it was interesting that we saw you had won a gold medal playing ball hockey for Team Canada last summer. Have you been able to continue playing that this past summer?
Yeah, when I first got back from Seattle, like kind of everything was all canceled there because of COVID, obviously. And
yeah.
One of, like, I think my Team Canada coach, he's from Winnipeg. We kind of all had a group chat with all like Team Manitoba guys and all the guys that like love ball hockey. And we were kind of figuring out a plan on how to continue the ball hockey season. So we kind of combined all the divisions together. So Division 1, 2, and 3, and 4, I think we're all together. So there are a lot more teams. You're playing against, you know, the old timers that have played ball hockey since they were my age.
Mm-hmm.
We still got a season in. I think it was a couple months. Nice. It was like 10 games. And then we had like top two teams would automatically play in finals for playoffs. And our team, we were called Roots. We were pretty good. We had all the 2003 born Team Manitoba guys and a couple older guys. And they're, you know, like I said, all the old timer teams that we'd play against were rough and tough. And there were a couple fights on our end, and that's the team we played against, a team called Players, and they're you know, a pretty rough team, and that's who we found in the playoffs. And we ended up first place, and they ended up second place. I think they swept us. It was a pretty tough, they were tough. They were the guys that played ball hockey for a long time, and just young guys like us weren't capable enough to pull it off. But you know, it was a good, we still got our season in and gonna be playing again next year. So
fights break out in ball hockey.
Oh yeah, it's a lot.
I never realized that.
Yeah, you got no padding other than the kind of the gloves, helmet, and shin pads, but some guys don't like to wear shin pads, so when you're getting cross checks to the back and slashes, it kind of gets annoying after a while. And so there's a couple fights broke out.
Wow, man. About a month ago now or something, the Central Scouting List comes out and you get an A rating. Is that So how do you, first of all, how do you find out about that? And is that something you were looking to have happen? Does it matter to you? Do you just try to avoid that stuff? What was that like to see that rating come out?
Well, I remember because I have Facebook and I have all these social media things. And I remember Facebook, like I'm getting a bunch of, you know, people tag you in posts. Someone tagged you in a post. And I was kind of like, I wasn't really paying attention to it. And then I kind of clicked on it. And I kind of had an idea that that list was coming out soon, like sooner or later. And obviously it's something to be proud of. And it's something that, you know, you worked hard for. But it's, you know, season hasn't started yet for me, like being an A-list. Just from coming off the season, I kind of just put it behind me because I know that I need to kind of work hard to continue to keep to stay on that list. And, you know, the mindset's at that the season's not hasn't started yet. So I guess it's something that I'm proud of. But at the same time, I kind of just put it behind me and kind of look to continue to get better and kind of stay consistent on being on that list.
Very cool.
And last season, you guys had a pretty young team. You know, you have 4, 5, 16-year-olds in the lineup every night. And you're going to have some young players this time. But you're a big part of that youth core. How exciting are you for the next couple of seasons as your group and the group behind you, you know, become those vets?
When I look forward to that, it kind of makes me feel happy about, you know, the guys that I did play with this year, like Kai, Siona, Davidson, and kind of all those O3s and O2s that they become your best friends and, you know, really good teammates and good players. And then off the ice, they're, you know, they're your best friends and they're guys you look forward to seeing every day and hanging out with a lot. So when there's a lot of kind of pressure on you guys being kind of the future for the team and having a lot of people look up to you guys, it's definitely a confidence booster. And it's something that, you know, I look forward to coming into the next seasons. And when you get that those seasons and you get to play at a young age, and we had a lot of guys who were playing at a young age, and to be able to go into the next few seasons experience and have those really good players coming in, like, I'm pretty sure like our first rounder scored like 80 goals or something this year. Like, to have young guys like that coming in and have like Gus and Korchinski and Penner and all these guys coming in, then we're all going to be young. And I think then a couple of years will be a really good team. And in this upcoming season, we're going to be a really good team too. I'm really looking forward to it. I have a lot of confidence in, you know, my teammates and coaches that we're going to have a great season. And it's only a matter of time before we get going. And once we do, we're going to be ready to go. And I think that we're going to come out guns blazing, and we're going to continue to keep that pressure on throughout the season. I think that we're going to be one of the best teams, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Any words for Everett fans or Portland fans that might be listening?
The Portland fans love you, Connor.
I'm not sorry for that celebration I had in Portland.
All right. We'll let him know. All right. Thank you so much, Connor. This has been awesome. Really appreciate your time, and best of luck to you here. I hope you guys get playing soon, and I know we'll all be watching and cheering you on. So thanks again for joining us. Really, really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you again, Connor, for joining us. Thank you again to the Seattle Thunderbirds for letting us talk to him. Our good friend Ian was
hooked us up.
Responsible for setting that up. Yep. And we just wanted to mention, man, for a 17-year-old kid, like when you talk to him or when you listen to him talk, does he sound like a 17-year-old kid to you?
I wish I had his knowledge at 30.
Yeah, exactly. Right. He's a very introspective kid. I think he's aware of what's around him and interesting guy. Loves the sport. Like, I don't think there's anybody who loves hockey on that team or that I've been around anyways than him. He's one of those guys, last off the ice kind of kid. You know, and just it's interesting. It's like, I couldn't imagine having people look up to me at 17. They didn't, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, at 17, I was driving around suburban Minneapolis making light-up deer hump each other in the winter, so.
Yeah. That's a role model of sorts.
Yeah. Nobody was looking up to me. That's all I'm saying. Enough about deer humping each other. Let's move on to our segments and our first segment is a very personal version of everyone's favorite segment, Goalie Gear Corner!
Yay.
Okay.
Go,
listen,
Goalie Gear Corner.
The crowd is on to you. You heard the Twitter review from @DontGoGlove saying he doesn't know if these groans are real or
Steve,
for comedic effect.
Steve is on to us, not the crowd. Not the crowd.
Yeah, I'm starting to question myself if these are genuine or if you're just doing it to try to get under my skin.
Yeah,
and speaking
really
of which, John, I have a bone to pick with you.
Uh-oh.
Because you may have seen, if you've been following us on Twitter or going to soundofhockey.com with any kind of regularity, that I put a new post up today with a video of my brand new custom Crap Weasel mask, which secretly you and Andy both said you thought was pretty cool. And I did this video. I worked really hard on it. I think it's great. I posted it. You retweeted it and just did a facepalm emoji. What the f*** was that?
Wow. That is a serious bone to pick.
Somebody must have had my account.
Yeah.
Or just put it on the list of complaints.
It happens.
I loved it. I loved it. Let's be clear. I loved it.
Thank you. All right. So our goalie gear corner today is my goalie mask, which I've actually had it for like a month and I've been holding on revealing it to you guys because I knew that at some point I was going to get around to doing a video because that was how I wanted to reveal it to the world. I thought it would be fun to show it and talk about it. So I did legitimately do a crap weasel goalie mask just because I love you, the podcast listeners, so much that I thought you would find it fun. I will put some pictures of it on the Sound of Hockey website post of this podcast. If you're listening to this on iTunes, you can go to our website and you can see pictures of the mask. You can also watch the video that I did, which does a pretty good rundown of it. But anyway, I'm very proud of it. So my idea on the theme was it was going to be an ode to Crap Weasel Nation from coast to coast. So remember, I used to live in New York, so I put New York, like a whole New York motif on one side, and then I put Seattle on the other side. And then I have our microphone logo from the podcast coming up out of the forest on the Seattle side. I have Mount Rainier. Down by the chin, I have the little NHL 2 Seattle shield. So kind of a subtle way of saying, hey, here's NHL 2 Seattle. And then the back, I have Minnesota and Wisconsin, the outlines of the states, and a little Wild logo where Minneapolis is, and a little Wisconsin Badger logo where Madison is. I have a little heart for my wife. And
the one that you punched.
The one that I punched in the head just before I
accidentally
her.
Accidentally.
Yep, yeah. Not intentional. Let's make that clear. I guess I should mention that there's a crap weasel as like the main
prominently
focus of the
displayed
mask.
Prominent.
The blue I thought would be like the sky. So anyway, it was a really cool process to get it done. That's only the second time in my life that I have been able to get that done. And just cool. Working with a professional artist to design something that is very specifically for you is a lot of fun. So shout out, by the way, to Gilby Designs, which also is in Minnesota. That's my story. That's my mask.
Check it out.
You know what my favorite part of your video was?
What's that?
When you point out that you were wearing the same shirt when you recorded the little narrative as opposed to when you were showing yourself trying it on. I would never have even noticed that until you pointed it out. Then I went back and looked, and sure enough, it's the same shirt.
I mean, I don't know. It's just a coincidence. It's a shirt.
Are you wearing that shirt now?
I'm not wearing it now. I had to look down to double check.
So you have other shirts.
I do have a couple other shirts, Anyway, that's my new mask. I'm very, very excited about it. I haven't gotten to wear it in any kind of game action yet because of COVID, but I'm looking forward to a time when I get to wear it. Funny little story for you about the recording of that video, by the way. Remember, we're in Minnesota right now, and we actually packed up our apartment and put everything in storage, so like in Seattle, and I didn't think it would make sense for me to bring the mask to Minnesota because I had no reason to bring it with me. So I packed it up, but so I was like, all right, well, I got to film this video really quick so that I can do my Goalie Gear Corner video. So I did it, and I recorded the audio separately, like with a microphone, and then didn't save the audio somehow. Ooh. Like if you really look closely, you can kind of see me in the background, like moving the mask around with like the clips that I'm using. And I had to very carefully like cut myself out because I'm talking the whole time. So I'm doing a Goalie Gear Corner video. Yeah. So that would have been really confusing, but I think I got it in a way that it doesn't look like
it looked pretty good.
Totally hacked. So that's it. Goalie Gear Corner. Check it out on soundofhockey.com. We now move on to our weekly one-timers. Whoopsh. Our first weekly one-timer. Whoopsh. Connor McDavid's new house is done, and I saw Twitter blowing up about this today, even perhaps more so than Twitter blew up about when Phil Kessel had the house for sale that just had like the one chair in the movie room. Remember that?
I do.
I don't know if it's really that deserved. I think like people were arguing about it over Twitter. Like, no, it's a nice house. No, it's a ridiculous house. I don't think it's that ridiculous of a house. If I had that house, I'd be thrilled. It's very black and white, but I mean, it's modern. It's stylish. It's got a massive wine fridge or cooler, whatever you want to call it. It's got its own basketball court. Like who's upset about that? It looks incredible. I want that house.
I think as it wasn't very colorful, people thought it was kind of stale, but also it was being staged for photos, right? I'm sure by now his socks are all over the floor and, you know, his mail's all piled up on the table. I'm sure he's now living in it, so it looks more
lived in. So I think you don't really understand the definition of staging for photos. I think you're saying just pick up your things, but
that's part of it, right?
Yeah, I guess. So do you think the basketball hoop isn't always there? You think they just added that for the photos?
Oh, no, I think that's probably there.
Okay, yeah. Anyway, I think it's a nice house. I don't think it's worth all the grief that people have been giving them on Twitter.
I would not complain if that's where I lived.
Yeah, I did see a Photoshop. Remember that photo of, like, the two old tourists yes. that took the very awkward photo of him? So there's a picture of the bed that's part of the, like, virtual tour, and somebody just Photoshopped that picture over the bed. Which, that was pretty funny. Just the very, very awkward picture of Connor McDavid with the two old tourists. But anyway, that's that. Our next weekly one-timer. Whoopsh. No season for the Wenatchee Wild. What's the story there?
So they're in the BCHL. They're the only U.S. team in the BCHL. And due to the borders being closed, and right now they can't even work out in the state of Washington, they decided to just not play this coming season. They do. They are vowing to come back for the 21-22 season. The BCHL, I should mention, is playing this year so far, but they just can't cross the border. So there's no one for the Wenatchee Wild to play. So it makes some sense why they chose to do this. They did, over the last month, they had some inter-squad scrimmages in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. I don't think that was probably a realistic long-term for the season kind of solution.
Scrimmage in Idaho? Yeah, you don't think that's sustainable for a season?
Yeah, probably not. So they probably looked at it and said, there's nothing really we can do. We have no one to play, so let's just shut it down.
You know, I love the Wenatchee Wild, totally support them, love the BCHL, but the tweet was a little interesting because it says, latest governor COVID-19 restrictions ends Wenatchee Wild's 2020-2021 season. Except, like you said, Andy, there's this whole border situation to kind of deal with, and you can't really quarantine when you go over the border. Nobody's going to come over here, but yeah. It sucks. It sucks for the players and the kids, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that's who I always think about in these situations. So, yeah, it's a bummer. It was more complicated than just the governor's restrictions.
They're trying to find, according to their statement they put out, they're trying to find places for their players to play this season if they can. That's kind of their main focus right now, which is nice. And I've had a couple people ask me if this means that the WHL, the Silvertips and Thunderbirds are going to be the next to cancel their seasons. And there's a whole different set of circumstances. You know, with the border closure still there, but the plan for the WHL is to have the U.S. division teams just play each other this season. So the border issue is kind of taken out of it. They think they can get players here, but they don't have to worry about traveling across the border to play teams north of the border. So totally different set of circumstances, and what the Wild are doing will have no impact on what the Western Hockey League decides to do.
Yep. There you go. And we're hearing a lot about all these teams and leagues and divisions and such having to cancel. It has been quite refreshing and quite fun to see a little college hockey. The Big Ten Network has been carrying some games nationally. I've enjoyed watching my Wisconsin Badgers and not so much my Minnesota Gophers. I liked them when I was a kid, but we've gotten to see them quite a bit. It's just been fun to watch. I've really genuinely enjoyed watching college hockey. I haven't paid as close of attention to it the last, you know, a few years as I had previously. So pretty great to see. Michigan looks like the real deal. I hate to say that because I've never particularly liked Michigan, but man, they have some good, good players on that team.
Yeah, they're pretty loaded, especially their incoming freshman class. They've got three or four highly touted prospects for this coming up draft. So those guys are all as advertised so far.
I've been watching some USHL and BCHL games, and that's been that's been fine, right? But
yeah,
there's nothing like the production around the Big Ten games. Like, that's been really enjoyable. So
yeah,
I definitely have enjoyed that too. And it's not, I don't want to say it's a higher level, but it might be a little notch above because you're dealing with older guys and some of the blue chip prospects that are kind of playing in on those teams.
Well, a higher level than USHL, it definitely is a higher
definitely
level.
Definitely is.
Yeah. And the AJHL and the BCHL, yeah.
Yeah.
And so we're all growing and learning from this. It's wonderful.
That's right. Our but next there is hockey weekly, out there if you want to watch it.
Yeah, it is out there. Oh, one timer. Whoopsh. All right, now let's talk about things that are being canceled and suspended. So Hockey Canada Selection Camp, which I know that we've been seeing lots of little clips from their red versus white scrimmages, has been suspended after a couple of positive COVID tests on Tuesday. Now, I know that they thought that they had like a pretty solid bubble set up, so...
But they're not quite in the bubble yet. They're in Red Deer right now. The bubble's in Edmonton. It's the same NHL bubble.
True.
So this is like the camp. If you remember back, the NHL had some of these same issues leading up to the playoffs, right? They were all in camp. There were a couple of positive tests popping up here and there. So hopefully it'll all get settled by the time they get into the Edmonton bubble. But yeah, that's not a good look when you start canceling.
No, finishes. And like something crazy with Hockey Canada has got like a 6-week camp leading up to World Juniors. It's like insane. And they're still kind of, a lot of the kids are with their families and stuff. And you know, if the families aren't on lockdown, then obviously the exposure kind of is pretty big compared to maybe some of the more traditional bubbles that we've seen work. But we'll see. Hopefully that's just a little small blip.
Yep.
Because I'm all about World Juniors, because that's the next big hockey event coming up.
And that Canada team, not only are they getting this extra time, but they're I mean, Kirby Dach is playing for them. They're pretty stacked. Like, a lot of times a guy like Kirby Dach would not play in it this year because he's already played a full season in the NHL. And, you know, if the Blackhawks were playing right now, they probably would not lend him, you know, after his second, in his second year. So it's a chance for some of these guys to get one more kick at the can, the gold medal can here. So it's going to be fun to watch that.
Man, in every clip of Kirby Dach doing something in one of those scrimmages, he's doing something like more and more ridiculous.
Like the kick
I think
pass.
It's one of those. Yeah, the kick pass was absurd. But I think it's one of those scenarios where, you know, he is better than everybody else, but also he just comes in with like a cockiness because of the situation. Right? Like he played a whole year in the NHL. You know, and now he's back just like playing against kids. Like, imagine that, right? Like, you're the same age, but like, imagine that you're literally just light years ahead of everybody else in terms of like the league that you're playing in, and you come back to play the junior. Like, that's wild. That's absolutely wild to imagine that. And you can just see it the way that he is just skating around people and doing ridiculous, like spinning around with the puck and kicking it with. What the hell, man? He should not. And, I mean, he shouldn't be there, but it's cool that he's there.
Yeah.
Even though, like you said, this is like an all-star team, he still looks like the best player out there.
Yeah.
A couple of friends of the pods, though, have had some goals. Seth Jarvis and Gage Gonzalez have each had a goal in one of those scrimmages. So.
And by the way, just because we're talking about it anyway, Columbus and Vegas both had some positive tests, which is a little concerning. I know there's a lot of things that are still kind of up in the air as far as NHL return to play is concerned. Do we think this puts any kind of a wrench in it? I mean, they're not in any kind of like a bubble, so you expect these things, but
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, yeah, the subtext here is that teams are starting to centralize and get ready for training camps. So a lot of, and one thing you might see if you're really paying attention, which I tend to, is a lot of the players that were playing overseas are being recalled and coming to North America. So it's probably possible that you're going to start to see a couple more positive tests. Hopefully not, but I think it's almost unavoidable at this time.
Mm-hmm. Our final weekly one-timer is actually a very sad one. Fred Sasikamous, who, if you don't know who that is, he was the very first Indigenous or First Nation player to play in the NHL. He just played a handful of games with the Chicago Blackhawks way back in the day, but people have been calling him a pioneer and, you know, had a huge impact on a lot of young players out there to make them believe that they could play in the NHL.
Yeah, and you know, we just had Connor Roulette on this episode, and I did a story with him and Roddy Ross about the connection to hockey and First Nation earlier in the year, and both of them mentioned Sasikamous as being a legend. That, you know, he's looked at like that kind of level, even though he only played a handful of games. Just being the first meant a lot to that community, and still somebody that they revere.
And he's been an evangelist for the sport for a while, and he was even named to the NHL Diversity Task Force over the summer when that was formed. So anyway, he dedicated his life to hockey, and that's pretty cool to see that all the work that he's done and all the outpour of support for him.
Yep, he's from Saskatchewan. He's of Cree, the Cree Nation, so a big loss, I think, for the community.
We want to give thanks for, you know, what we're thankful for, because it's Thanksgiving this week, which is a big deal here in the United States, if you aren't familiar. Last year, I know that I said I was thankful for our listeners. That has not changed. I have to say that has absolutely not changed. I am very thankful for good health. I know that not everybody has that right now, and it's been just a really, really rough year on a lot of people. And all things considered, like me personally, I have the privilege of being able to work from home and be surrounded by people I love, and that's pretty important to me. So, but really, I genuinely appreciate all the support that you all have given us. You know, we launched this new website, which was a huge undertaking and a ton of fun to do. And now it's up and running. So, you know, that's exciting. So I'm thankful for that. And, but just again, just thank you all for your support and continuing to come back every week and, you know, listen to us ramble and say stupid things to each other.
Yes, I would second that. Our listeners and readers are great, and it does feel like we've created this community, and we're just an equal part of it as all of you guys out there are too. So definitely thank you, and if I can be the first one, we always say we spend so much time saying thanks. Let me be the first to say you're welcome.
Oh, welcome's giving.
I want to second all that, or third it, I guess. But
third it, yeah.
I also want to give a special thanks to our contributors at the site. Our site is developing some great content, soundofhockey.com. Obviously, Andy, obviously you, Darren, but also Josh and Jim have been contributing on mm-hmm. some really good content that's very enjoyable. It's because of everybody coming together and kind of believing in what we're doing. It's creating a really good kind of community. And then one last thing I want to be thankful is to my editor, and I'll refer to her as AM. She's been, means more to me than, and has meant a lot to this cause and the support that she's provided. And then Darren, big thanks to everything you do for the podcast. It makes us so special. And
amen. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you both. I love you both. It's been really, really wonderful to do this with you. And yeah, that's it. I'm getting a little emotional, so let's move on. We close the show with our tweets of the week. Andy, your tweet of the week.
Mine comes from a non-hockey person, a Twitter handle called Shauna. I think she used to be like a writer for Conan or something. But she's kind of funny. She wrote out, and this is staying on theme, it's Thanksgiving. For every person who's upset about staying home for the holidays, there are probably 10 more who are just as grateful for a valid excuse to do it. I like that.
That's good. Yeah, that's good. I saw one that was like, yeah, very similar. Just for all the people that complain about having to be around their family, here's your opportunity to not do it. So, yeah. My tweet of the week comes from, it's not really a hockey tweet, but it comes from a hockey Twitter person, Mark Lazarus, mm-hmm. who covers the Chicago Blackhawks. There was a headline that said, Biden to name longtime aide Blinken as Secretary of State. Mark Lazarus retweeted it and said, did you say Abe Lincoln? No, I didn't say Abe Lincoln. I said Aide Blinken. Which if you're a Robin Hood Men in Tights fan, then you get that reference, and that's quite frankly one of my favorite movie quotes of all time.
Well, and Mark tagged Mel Brooks there too.
Yes, he did tag Mel Brooks, and man, that was just perfect. It was the perfect tweet. I loved it. Well done, Mark Lazarus. I thought that was incredibly funny, so I appreciated that. John, your tweet of the week.
So mine comes from friend of the pod, Chris Peters, the best friend of the pod, Chris Peters.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
He's been on the mm-hmm. show multiple times.
The BFOP.
Yeah, he tweets, Brock Caulfield's reign of the highest scoring Caulfield at Wisconsin has ended as he is now tied with Cole. A Cole Caulfield, if you will. Cole Caulfield has since broken the Caulfield record and is now the leading Caulfield at Wisconsin in goals scored.
Of all time, or just, is that all time?
Yes.
Good question. I think they're the only two Caulfields that have played there, well, but I'm not 100% sure on that. But yeah, there are two Caulfields on the Badgers, so that's kind of the underlying joke there that people may not realize, that Cole Caulfield gets all the recognition because he's a high draft pick,
yeah.
But his brother is there as well.
Our best friend of the pod, Chris Peters, had another good one. He's been on a roll this week. The Miami Hockey tweeted out a guy who's as committed to them.
Yeah, I saw this
and
one too.
He responded, he said, here's what Chris says, when I'm at my best, I am just being my, and then the kid's name is Primo Self, and so that's the next part of that.
Just being my primo self.
Yep, I got a kick out of that.
Good stuff. Thank you again to Connor Roulette for joining us on the podcast. Thank you again to the Seattle Thunderbirds for letting us talk to him. Thank you to Steve at Don't Go Glove for that wonderful 6-star Twitter review. Please do leave your review on iTunes if you haven't already so that we can actually have one to read next week. Subscribe on Stitcher, subscribe on Spotify, subscribe on iTunes. And we will talk to you all next week for episode 114. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We love you. Thank you so much.
Like the fella once said, ain't that a kick in the head? The room was completely black. I hugged her and she hugged back. Like the sailor said, quote, ain't that a hole in a boat? My head keeps spinning. I go to sleep and keep grinning. If this is just the beginning, my life is gonna be beautiful. I've sunshine enough to spread.